Glenn Hubbard will join us here in just a couple of minutes. In fact, let's have him join us right now. Glenn Hubbard, longtime member of the Braves organization as a player and a first base coach, kind enough to join us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Glenn, we do appreciate the time. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Doing great, Glenn. Good to catch up with you. It's been a while.
It's been 10 years.
It probably has been. There were a lot of afternoons early in that dugout. I was telling Nick, and I was talking about a little bit on the air, that when you get down to the ballpark early and there are a couple of people that you can have the baseball conversation with, you do miss those things. It doesn't happen quite as often, I'm sure, around ballparks all around the country.
Well, I don't get an opportunity to do it anymore. I'm sure you do because you're there. I just, being a coach in the minor leagues, I might have a young kid in the dugout, but not guys like you. And I enjoyed those times.
Glenn Hubbard is with us. We talked about this earlier in the program as we were promoting the fact, Glenn, that you were coming on with us. So you're an all-star in 1983. You're batting in the seventh inning. You just brought up Domino Joe Garagiola. He and Vin Scully make numerous lighthearted comments about your full beard. You're kind of ahead of your time. Were you not with the full beard? You see them everywhere now.
Yeah, I've got a card to prove it with a snake around my neck, full beard. I don't know what I was doing. You know, the thing about it, my sons look that way now.
What's the story with the snake?
Now.
Yeah, what is the story with the snake?
1984, you're on the Fleer card, for those that haven't seen it, with a boa constrictor around your neck.
Well, it was a birthday party for the Philly Fanatic. You can see him in the background in the picture, and they just had a bunch of people there. And there was a guy with a big snake, and I asked the photographer, hey, can I get my picture taken? So he took my picture, sent me a big, I think it was an 8x10, and next thing I know, in spring training, a young kid comes up to me and says, can you autograph this? And I'm like, really? They put it on a card? I was mad for a while, but it's turned out to be a unique card.
Listen, you are old school. I'm assuming you were mad because you thought, hey, this is not really what's supposed to be out there for the world to see in the baseball world for me as a player. Was that sort of part of it?
Well, I wasn't doing it to... for that reason. Fleer was an upstart company, and they were trying to get unique cards out there. You know, they have the Billy Ripken card, which they did that on purpose. They had Jay Johnstone had a card with an umbrella thing on his head. I mean, there was a lot of and I just wanted a baseball card. And but, you know, I look back on it, and I'm appreciative of having any cards. I was fortunate to get there.
Hey, Glenn, let's talk a little bit about the beginning of your career. We talk about missing opening day today, and fans are missing it. What's it like? I don't recall. Were you brought up in the middle of 78, or were you on the roster opening day 78, or did you have to wait till 79?
No, it was middle of 78. Got brought up middle of that season, and started the season next year on the roster in 79. But it's disappointing, but... you know, I mean, safety first. We have to do what we have to do as a nation to get through this thing.
Did you know you were going to make the 79 team? Was it a lock after the time in 78? I guess the question about opening day, when you realize, wow, opening day, first day up in the majors is incredible, but your first opening day has got to be special too.
Yeah, it was. It was. And but I never assumed I made any team. I was, when I was drafted, I was the last guy drafted that year for the Braves. And I never took anything for granted. Even after I had a pretty good year, I just assumed that I needed to make a team. And it kept me around for a while. And even now as a coach, I don't assume anything. I stopped assuming stuff a long time ago.
It's probably a good way to go through life. You don't make yourself crazy, and that's what would happen otherwise.
It makes you fight a little more. It makes you a little on edge. And I think when you're on edge a little, you play better, or you coach better, or, you know, as a coach, you recognize you're not really doing it for you. You're doing it for that young kid.
you played 10-plus years in the major leagues. Did you have 10-year talent coming out of high school, playing in high school? Did you have 10-year major league talent, or did you have to work for every bit of it?
I worked for everything. I dreamed of making the big leagues, but I never thought. You know, when I got there, when I stepped on that field the first time, I was like, I can't believe I'm here. You know, I mean, it was, and it passed by so quick that I thought, you know, I made it 10 years, and I can't believe I made it 10 years.
Do you understand guys like you? We call them grinders, and I think for a while people were like, oh, grinders, it's kind of insulting. I've said you don't win in any sport unless you have grinders, unless you have guys who don't believe that this is my job and I got to work.
Right.
But do you know that you were a fan favorite probably in a lot of ways because stature, you weren't a superstar? I think people grab our producer, Matt Edgar, he told us the other day when I mentioned I was going to be contacting you, he said you were his favorite player. Now, look, he was a middle infielder. He wasn't a biggish guy. But did you understand some of that when you were playing in the middle of your career, that people will gravitate to people who look a little bit more like them?
I didn't realize it now. I mean, I didn't realize it then, but I do realize it now that people, the stuff I get in the mail, you know, they talk about that. And I didn't realize it. I didn't realize I was a small guy. I mean, I'm a small guy, okay? But in high school, in Legion ball, and I didn't realize I was a small guy until I got to the big leagues and everybody started saying, you know, you're one of the smallest guys in the big leagues. Well, you know, I never thought that way. I just thought, you know what, I got to go out there and I've got to compete against that pitcher. And I got to try to be better than him. And having done that, I wasn't better than a lot, but I stayed around a little.
Glenn Hubbard with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. And, of course, you're America's team. People are watching on TBS, especially in 1982 when you guys come out of nowhere as a team. You win the first 13 games of the season. Take us back to that time. How wild was it to be right in the middle of all of that?
Yeah, it was crazy. Number one, being America's team. I mean, I didn't realize what that meant until I was up in North Carolina at a Pizza Hut. I don't know why we went up there, but the wife and I went up there, and somebody came over and asked me for my autograph, and I'm thinking, how do they even know, you know, who I am? And it was because of baseball on TV. And but that 1982 season, you know, I think we had the best record in spring training with Joe Torre that year, and it kind of made us believe that we could win, and then just things fell into place during that 13-game winning streak to start the season. I mean, everybody was contributing, and, you know, I mean, it was great.
You played second base for about 100 years. Second base was a wild, wild west. Guys came in hard. They came in high. There were really no rules. You're in the wrong place, you're going to get knocked out into left center field. If you wanted to, you wanted the guy to get down, you were going to throw one right between his eyes. Can you explain, and maybe there's a guy or two that you said when he was on first, you were maybe a little bit more aware, but I know you well enough to know that you thought that was part of the game. Part of the game is to actually make that play. He's got to try to make it, and I've got to try to make it.
Well, they tried to roll block you back then. I mean, it was any way, anyhow, to break up that double play. And I know Dave Parker tried to get me for years. And I would change it up. I'd go across the base, and then I'd step back off the base. I'd step off the backside. I'd mix it up so guys didn't know where I was going.
So and, a moving target. You made yourself a moving target.
You know what? Bobby Dews, my mentor, used to say a moving target's hard to hit. And so I made my – and now – and I used to teach that way for guys that were playing second base. And now you don't really – I mean, you have to teach get out, get up, because if they do hit you, then they just roll you, and you don't get hurt. You're not anchored to the ground. But it's a different way of teaching. You don't really – don't worry about the guys crushing you at second. Before, it was, you better get out of the way. They're going to get you.
We'll talk about your coaching career in a second, but we also wanted to ask you, you know, obviously here in Atlanta for as long as you were, but then you end up in Oakland. Nick, I know that we were talking about it yesterday.
Glenn Hubbard with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. You're with the A's 88 and 89. Talk about that traveling show and how wild it was.
Well, it was a great, great ball clubs out there. Of course, you had the Bash Brothers. You had Walt Weiss was there his rookie year, the first year. Canseco hit 40 home runs, stole 40 bases. We had great pitching. We had great relief pitching. And we had phenomenal coaching staff with La Russa and Dave Duncan and Dave McKay and Renee Lassman. They were the most – I learned a lot from the men that managed me. I had Tony La Russa. I had Bobby Cox. And I had Joe Torre as managers, all three of them. All three of them are different, but I learned from all of that. And, you know, it was fun going into cities knowing we were going to drop five or six on the board, and we had to pitch to shut down the teams to one or two. You know what I mean? It was just – it was fun.
Well, Dave Stewart, Dave Stewart was a mean man, but I'm assuming batting practice because you and I used to sit there early, and there's only certain guys – that team must have been get your ass to the ballpark because you want to watch some BP as well.
Well, there was a lot of guys that could go deep on you. I mean, you had Cardi Lansford at third, who was the ultimate professional I've ever been around. If you messed up on the field, when Canseco messed up, and he did a lot, he clowned around out in the field. Lansford would meet him in the dugout and just slap him. What are you doing out there? We're trying to win ball games. Ultimate professional. You had Walt Weiss. You had McGuire at first, Terry Steinbach, Dave Henderson, Dave Parker, and Ricky Henderson came in. And phenomenal team. I mean, just it was fun to be on that team. It really was. I was blessed to be out there. You know, that was my favorite team growing up as a kid was the Oakland A's, and to be able to play on them. Burt Campanaris, I was a shortstop in high all the way through high school, and Burt Campanaris was my favorite player.
And it's the least talked about great team. They win those three World Series, and if you're the right age, there's a good reason why the A's will become your favorite team. Now, do you remember when Gibson comes out of the dugout? I mean, you're on the field. Do you remember that whole idea that what the hell is this guy doing out here?
Well, he couldn't even walk. He had two blown hamstrings. And it was like, well, just keep the ball down and he won't hit it, you know, because he's a great player. He really was. It was the worst loss of my career walking off the field. You know, he throws that backdoor slider kind of. Eckersley was phenomenal. Let me tell you, that guy was, when he came in the game, for the most part, the game was over. You know, it was over. And it was terrible. I mean, he couldn't even hardly walk to the plate. He took a couple swings, and it was like, he's hurting. And all of a sudden, here it is. It's over. And devastating. But the Dodgers weren't even supposed to – that year, they weren't supposed to beat the Mets. The Mets had reeled off, I think, 100 games or something like that. And they weren't even supposed to beat the Mets. But that's why you can't take for granted. It doesn't matter. When you get to the playoffs – it doesn't matter what you did. Any team can win those games. They're all big league professional teams.
Got to ask about the coaching because we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the 95 season. And you start coaching, so you must have had some of those guys in the minors. You knew these guys. Obviously, when you come up to the major league staff, there's a lot of talent. But what's it like to be in the minor leagues? You get to tell a guy's moving up to the next level. Sometimes you get to tell a guy's going up to the majors. That group from 95 and sort of the ones that were winning into the later 90s, you had those guys in the minors.
I had them all. My first year as a coach, Rod Gilbreth saw me at a Little League game. I had been released by the A's, and I was at a Little League game, and he asked me if I was ready to go back to work, and I said, yeah, I was ready yesterday. And he said, well, we might have a scout job. And I told him, I said, Rod, I don't want to scout. I want to be on the field if I'm going to be anything. So I think they made up a job for me, sent me down to Bradenton, Florida, and Chipper Jones was there. and that was my first introduction to coaching infielders and the like. And listen, we had going around the horn in AAA that one year that I was there. You had Klesko at first, Ramon Caraballo at short, Chipper at short, Ramon Caraballo at second, Jose Oliva at third, Javi Lopez, Tony Tarasco, Melvin Nieves, and kid from Arizona State in center field. But anyway, phenomenal prospects. It used to be the Braves were loaded throughout the minor leagues. I mean, we had prospects everywhere.
So how much recognition or how much – I'm going to be very honest with you. Chip has already texted me to say that Hubby's the best. I mean, that's the quote from him, because I know that guys remember the first coaches that they're around. Knowing that you had played for as long as you did in the majors, when you walk up to guys who are trying to make a living for the first time, high school kids, maybe guys with a few years of college – when guys know that you have 10, 11 years in and you weren't the guy who had it easy, how much credibility does that give you in a minor league system?
Well, it probably did. I never thought about that. All I thought about is, you know what? And I always told them, if you're willing to work, you can get better. You can, you know, number one, guys that get signed, they're the best just by walking out on the field. Chipper was the best kid in the state of Florida just because he walked out on the field and God gave him the ability. But now when you get into minor leagues, every kid on that field, one kid was the best in California, Arkansas, Tennessee. You know, I mean, you got to work. And you got to get better at the things that you're lacking in. And they knew I was willing to get out there. I mean, I always showed up early. Hey, if you want to work, let's go. And that probably, in the end, and still does. I mean, I'm at the level that's, if you're not in the major leagues, low A ball is the best level, because you tell a kid to be out there at 1 o'clock and he'll be there. He'll show up at noon. They want to work. They want to get better. And it's fun. I probably didn't do enough for Chipper. I enjoyed working with him. You know, I mean, Chipper was what he was. As a hitting coach, the biggest thing you could do with Chipper was stay out of the way. You know, I mean, some kids are like that. Just don't make them any worse.
Glenn Hubbard is with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. For those that don't know, you're still down at Single A in the Royals organization working with Lexington. But it doesn't matter. Do you find that Class A, millionaires at the major league level, the great ones want to be coached? They want to work, do they not?
Yes, I do. I mean, there hasn't been any kids that come through Lexington that hasn't wanted to get out there. You tell them to get out there. You ask them, hey, can you make it at 1 tomorrow? Yes, sir. And they show up and they work. And I don't kill them. We work on specific things when we go out there. And they realize that I'm not going to kill them for the game. And even if I did, that is more important than game time sometimes.
Right. Mark DeRosa said it the other day with us. He said, look, there were guys who would bust my ass pregame, and I might not play that game, but the work I did earlier in the day was going to be more important than those four at-bats. Before we let you go, is it like children where we're not supposed to ask? We've been asking guys who their favorite teammates are. I do want to ask you that. A guy or two that we might not know, and that guy was a good teammate. But when you talk about young guys and you talk about as a coach, do you have a couple of guys that you sort of put in a special category of, I just like the way they went about their business. They were the type of guy that you'd sit and have a beer with and talk about baseball with. Do you have a few guys like that?
I was blessed to play with a lot of good guys. Chris Chambliss, Dale Murphy. Dale Murphy's, you know, there's a lot of guys that are, there's some stuff put in the paper about a certain player. And as guys behind the scenes, and probably you realize it too, you think, well, that's not all true.
Right.
You know, that right there is not true. But Dale Murphy, everything that's written about him is true. he was just a special guy to be around. Good leader, good father, good husband, good ball player. You know, everything about him for me. That's probably my. But I, Bruce Benedict. I mean, I he got drafted my second year, and we went up to the minors together, and to be able to play with him, and you know, I mean, just there's so many guys. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, and I know that I was blessed in this game to be around three Hall of Fame managers, three Hall of Fame pitchers in Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz, Chipper, a Hall of Famer. I use all those guys in their approach to the game and how they worked at the game. Chipper, AAA, him and Jim Tomei are leading the league in hitting. It's 1-2. So the last day of the season, we made it to playoffs. That team made it to playoffs, too. Optional hitting. There's two guys in the cage. One for each team. Jim Tomei, Chipper Jones. Is that coincidence that they came in, they went into the Hall of Fame? Yeah, Maybe not.
Yeah, you don't wish your way to that. Before we let you go, I don't know if you remember, one of the other things I think you and I used to do quite a bit in the dugout, you more so, but we'd have conversations about the idea of that guy could play for me. And we'd look at other teams, like as guys were taking infield and guys were taking BP. And I just remember that I've had conversations, and it's Walt Weiss is sort of the new version of that now. But I always loved hearing guys who played in the game say, that guy, look, his numbers might not be eye-popping, but that guy's supposed to be on a roster, and I take him over here. Right. I've always found those conversations to be really, really interesting when you talk about makeup of a guy.
Well, that makeup transfers into the dugout and into the locker room, the way guys go about playing the game. And to me, Carney Lassford, I mentioned his name before, I would put him on every team I ever played on, just by the way he went about his business on the field, the way he goes about his work habits, everything. And you got to have guys like that. Mark Emke, for crying out loud. That guy showed up every year in the playoffs. He turned double plays. He played the good defense. And we all know if you don't have pitching and defense, it's hard to win. It's hard to win at the big league level.
Anybody nastier than Dave Stewart on game day?
He got into his zone. You know, it's funny. You know, he pulled his hat down real, and he talked like Mike Tyson. He had a high voice. You know, you got that mean look on the mound, get after you. And then after the game, he opens up his mouth, and you think, oh, you know, he great approach to the game. And, you know, there's a guy, he got released three times. The Dodgers released him, the Phillies released him, and the Oakland A's, I mean, not the, the Texas Rangers released him. But in the midst of that, he came up with a pitch. It's called a split finger or a fork ball, whatever you want, and the rest is history.
Well, fascinating stuff, Glenn Hubbard. We do appreciate the time that you spent with us this morning. Best of luck as you continue to shape some younger players down at Single A, and hopefully one day when all of this blows over, we can have you in studio with us.
Well, I'd love to get in there again. I enjoyed catching up with you guys again, and good luck this year. I've been watching the Braves for a long time in Rome, and I've been telling people I go to church, and they say, man, what about the Braves? I said, listen, give it a couple years. They got a ton of talent coming, and it's finally there. I saw all those guys come through Rome the last 7 years, mm-hmm. and they still have talent. It's amazing that they just keep drafting and drafting, and they keep winning.
Well, miss you up here at the major league level, and the more baseball guys in baseball, the more guys who are advocates for the game, the better, and you are certainly one of those guys.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Glenn. We'll talk soon. Glenn Hubbard joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. That's